Hi, I'm Marty Gruzzani, and this is the Marty Gruzzani Show. As a full-time real estate investor and business owner, I have a real fascination of finding the key principles for business success and personal development. This show is a reflection of my personal mission to find out what truly makes somebody successful in business and in life. We will find tools and tactics that they've used to reach those levels. If you're the type of person is not satisfied with average and you have a hunger for learning that will never cease, this show is for you. Welcome to the show.
McQuaid.
Marty Gruzzanti, how are you?
I'm doing great, buddy. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you, sir. Appreciate the opportunity. This is awesome.
Dude, you know what's funny? I think we've known each other. We've known of each other for 5-6 years.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but I didn't really get to know you until the last kind of 12 months.
Right.
You know, to really understand like what you do, who you are, chop it up with you at different events, and kind of hear your story. I love your story. You know, going back to the Home Depot days and just a road warrior.
I'll never go back to that. I don't miss those days at all. It gave me the avenue to do what I'm doing now and the tools and all that stuff. But nope, never again.
Well, let's talk about it because, you know, for me, building our multifamily portfolio and the business that.
Congratulations on that.
Thank you, friend. Again. Appreciate you. And really just that exercise and practice of going from residential to commercial, it's just a constant battle of like, you know, making that next step. And because there's so much that's keeping you in residential. And, but you see the opportunity in commercial. And, but anyways, before we kind of jump into that, because I want to talk to you some stuff about what we're doing. But first of all, who are you? And what do you do on a day-to-day? And what is, you know, is it trademarked now? Are you going for the patent?
It's live. No, it's live. I have the trademark.
The TCO method.
The TCO method.
All right, let's talk
a little approved.
I love that. Okay, congrats to you. That's amazing.
Yeah. It didn't quite go the way I was planning. So I wrote a book, right? Because everybody's like, oh, you should write a book. You should do this. You should do this. So I wrote the book. It's a manuscript. It's not published. And I had this bright idea. I'm like, well, what the hell am I going to call it, right? So it's all about total cost of ownership, which is a long story in and of itself. But I go to file, get everything done, June of 2022. I file the trademark with my attorney, use a lawyer, did all the things that we were supposed to do. By April, they hadn't even looked at it. It was still sitting on somebody's desk.
Mangia.
Because they were backed up from COVID. Fine, whatever. It's the government, right? So whatever. It is what it is. Come to find out, not only was it sitting on somebody's desk unlooked at, but they had no idea it was sitting on someone's desk. So they lit a fire. They put like the escalation person in charge and she rips the application apart, completely shreds it. And it's like, yeah, hard decline.
Hard decline.
Hard decline. Like, oh, okay, why? Like we could appeal it and we could build a case and do all that stuff. So we started working on that, right? So I'm thousands of dollars into this now and well over 6 months. And it comes to find out that it's because you can't trademark the word method because you can't trademark a process method, blah, blah, blah. So all this technical crap is legal mumbo jumbo. It doesn't mean anything. At the end of the day, they approved it. I went to get it done initially so I could have the trademark registered for the book. They registered it for electronic media and education, and they didn't give it to me for printed media or the book. So I have to wait now and let it mature and season for a year, and then I can go back and reapply and try to get the paper version.
Does that screws another application?
I start from scratch.
Okay, another lawyer
new
fee.
Money, new lawyer fee. The whole nine
so
years.
If you would have done it, if you knew better,
would have been much better prepared for it, would have had everything already started, would have had printed materials ready to go because you have to show proof of use, which I had because I had written the book, but it wasn't being publicly distributed. And they're like, well, it's not really a trade name yet because not enough people nationally know or recognize it as a trade name. So here's what you need to do. So now I know, right? Learning
right.
experience. But it was a very expensive, timely one because they didn't officially, it didn't officially get the blessing until about 2 weeks ago.
Shouldn't your patent attorney... kind of.
We're not going down that road. All right.
So, but that's actually kind of interesting stuff, right?
Yeah.
Now you know how to probably trademark shit.
Right.
Which is great.
Which is Definitely a learning curve. Not really in my wheelhouse or something I ever expected to have to learn.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, so, right. Not in 2019.
Why
right?
I hire people. Right.
So, right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. All right. So total cost of ownership.
Total cost of ownership.
I love it because it makes you think, okay, so, but explain total cost of ownership for a multifamily general partner.
Sure. So total cost of ownership isn't really something that's done a lot in real estate because there's too many variables, but it's been done in manufacturing and IT for decades, right? Like since the 80s. So this is nothing new that I've invented. It's just, I literally was talking to a operator, right? Family office, private operator, pitching a project in Pennsylvania. And I happened to say, well, listen, this is about your total cost of ownership. How long are you going to own this property for? Oh, I'm going to own it for, you know, at least 7 to 10 years. Okay, well, let's talk about those things that'll pay for themselves and then start paying you back in that 7 to 10 year time frame while you're doing these renos and rehabs. Because my background is all building materials, right? It's all doing supply for new construction, renovation, multifamily, single family, all that stuff. Like, you name it, if it's a construction project, I've done it. From 200 square foot additions and, you know, 70 square foot bathrooms to 34,000 square foot mansions in Webster. Mm. To commercial projects and build outs all over the country. So that's kind of where I bring my tool set and my skills from. And yep. For the GP, for the sponsor that's not an operator, I don't talk about, well, if you put this neat thing in, it's going to save you this much money, because they don't care. They want to know how much money they save. They don't want to know why. They just want to know how.
Yeah. Right?
So it's about the end goal, not about the technical crap that goes into it.
Interesting.
So total cost of ownership is the total cost it takes you to buy that asset, operate and run that asset, and eventually dispose of that asset. And you include all that into your total cost of ownership. Property management, you got a lot of inputs, right? You don't know what kind of quality tenant you're going to have. You can't predict CapEx half the time. Like, you know things are going to fail at a certain time because they have a lifespan.
Right.
But you don't know the exact time that's going to fail.
Right.
Right. But you can do things that look at longevity and go, well, if I plan for the lowest common denominator that comes into this apartment, that comes into this office space, that comes into whatever, I know they're going to be tracking in water and mud. I know they're going to have pets. I know they're going to have kids. I know they're going to have all this stuff. Why would I put a product in there that I know is going to get damaged or fail, or that requires them to do something that I know that a lot of them aren't going to do?
Right.
So why don't we just cut that variable out of it and put something in there that's a little more resilient, and maybe it'll pay for itself. And what I help them do is run the numbers on that. Like, what's your plan? Are you going to hold this thing for 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, forever? Like, what's your actual plan? And then we look at how the reno they're going to do to raise the rents and add amenities and do all the things that everybody talks about. Well, what if we do this instead? You'll spend a little more today, but it's going to pay you back over time, and eventually start putting money back in the till because you're going to eliminate maintenance. You're going to eliminate this. So it's really something that works better if you're vertically integrated. If you're using third-party property management, it ain't going to work. And it's basically because there's no skin in the game for them to do that, to play
right.
that game.
Right.
Because they're making their money off their fee, but if they don't have maintenance calls, they're not going to get the extra
right
from having those interactions.
That's
with
how they
the
make
tenants,
their money.
And that's how they make their money a lot of the time, right? They're marking up materials, they're marking up labor, they're charging you for what it, you know, the time invested to do X, Y, and Z when there's a maintenance call. All the software, all the operating systems, all the overhead. You start to cut down on all that stuff, and it pays you back over time. And that's really what total cost of ownership is all about, is taking all of those things and looking at it from the very beginning and building everything in and doing the system so that you know generally how long something is going to last. Like, you have a kitchen fire, it's a kitchen fire, right? But what if you didn't have a self-cleaning stove, right? You put a regular stove in, self-cleaning stove, you have a tenant in for 5 years. Cool. You think they cleaned it once in 5 years? No. They want their deposit. They're going to click that thing over, turn the self-clean on, boom, kitchen fire.
Right.
Happens more often than not. Can you buy a stove anymore without self-cleaning? It's really hard to find them.
Right.
But by the same token, if you're in a certain class of property in certain neighborhoods, you probably don't want that. Like, if you want long-term tenants, you want guys and gals that are in there that are going to stay for 3 to 5 years, that's every property manager's dream.
Absolutely.
Because you don't want turnover.
Right.
It costs too much money.
Right.
So if you can keep them in there, great. But if you're going to have a kitchen fire because they did this or this, then maybe you stop using those. If you put water in the door in a multifamily apartment building and there's a kitchen upstairs, you're going to put ice makers in. You're going to run that water line. Well, what happens when they go to clean behind the fridge? Are they going to unhook the water, turn the water off, or are they just going to pull it out and snap the thing? Right? What's going to happen? How is that going to help you?
You know, it's funny. I'm laughing because I'm just thinking of a... This stuff's not in books, first of all. No. Let's just throw it out there. Like, when you're reading about real estate investing and multifamily investing, what you're saying is not in any book. So I can't wait for this book to come out. I think it's going to be amazing. The second thing is that you really, for you, you need to come into the project right in the beginning.
That's the best time.
Right? Yeah, that's where I can see this being super successful is, hey, let me in right in the beginning, because I know it's going to sound shitty at first that instead of you buying that $100 toilet at Home Depot, you buy the $160 toilet. But here's why, right?
Yep.
Because you're going to save on the, you know, maybe the two maintenance calls that might come in during that time. Oh, by the way, the water issue that you're going to get because it's, you're having a water, the toilet's running.
Yep.
So, and oh, by the way, they're probably not noticing, the tenant's probably not noticing that there's an issue.
Yep.
So there's just these little tiny things which overall make up TCO.
It's a ton of small, low-hanging fruit that people just consider part of the cost of doing business. The problem is that when you just look at things at the cost of doing business, you're not looking at the opportunity cost and what that hits you for over time. And that's where the difference comes in on the decision-making process is, this is going to help you, here's why. What's more expensive, the $160 toilet outright or the $300 or $400 you're going to pay the guy to go in there and change
no
it?
No doubt.
So how do you fix a flapper? What does that cost you? Oh, it's like $10. Okay, so how much is your guy's time? How long does it take you to schedule the appointment with maintenance, get the guy in the unit, right? Schedule to be in the unit with the tenant, and then check to see what it needs. And then he's got to go get the part, whether it's in the shop, whether it's in his truck, whether it's at Home Depot or Lowe's or wherever, he's got to do that running. So by the time you're all said and done, you're fully into probably 15 to 20 minutes of office time, taking a call or getting the work order entry done. That's all the overhead for whoever's in the office doing that. And then you've got this guy who maybe has to drive there if they don't live on site, right? If it's multifamily, if it's single family, they're definitely going to drive there.
Yeah.
And then they got to leave and go get parts and then come back.
Right.
And hopefully the homeowner's still there, or they have permission to get back in when nobody's home.
Right.
There's no dogs running around and all the other things that go sideways. So you're talking about $300 or $400 for a maintenance call that could have been zero.
Right.
So when you start to scale all that stuff and you figure, oh, well, these problems start happening on average about year three to year five, and then it doesn't even look at the extra water use and the extra, you know, utilities or whatever it is, why wouldn't you do it? And that's really where it comes down to it, is you have to justify that by the hold period. Like, if you're going to flip it and you're going to sell it in 6 months, capital gain sucks, but good for you, right? You're going to make money and get out. It's not your problem.
Right.
So it doesn't always work in that situation.
I can see this being kind of a tougher method only with syndicators because, well, I should say the last 2 years, 3 years, everyone was just flipping.
Yeah.
You know, syndicators really are, you're flipping property. Yeah. You're not
holding. 5 to 7 years at the most.
Right, at the most.
Yeah.
And really it's the last couple of years been maybe 3 to 5.
Correct.
Right? So, but I see that, as we know, that's not happening as much as anymore.
it's a little rough right now.
But definitely somebody who goes, look, this is a trophy asset I want for the rest of my life.
Yep.
This is a no-brainer. Yep. This is an absolute must. But again, I can see there's a little bit of selling on your end. And it's not selling, it's just educating, right? Where it's like, well, look, yeah, you might get an offer out of nowhere and sell it, but at the end of the day, just do the right thing. It's kind of the right thing to do.
Well, the thing is, it's going to show on the NOI, right? You're not deferring maintenance. You're doing this up front. If you're going to hold the thing for over a year, you're going to, once the work is done, you're going to reflect it in the NOI over time, because you're going to see labor reductions and maintenance reductions. And if you keep records like time to repair and maintenance call, service quality and all that stuff, using whatever system you're using, whether it's Yardi or OneSite or RealPage or any of the dozen others that are out there,
right,
they all have these integrations to track all this stuff and give you super granular visual detail, but most people don't use it. Like, they use a few of the modules for collecting rent and bookkeeping and keeping track of rent rolls and that kind of stuff, but they don't get into the nitty-gritty of all these things that are available. They just don't. It's just not common to see anybody who's got all that stuff turned on and dialed in to a point where it's useful information.
Right.
Right. It's available. They just don't know how to use it.
They don't know how to use it. So for the audience, for the thousands, for the millions of people watching, what are, like, for, let's just say, for multifamily owners,
yep,
what are 3 to 5 must-dos, do you think, when you're thinking of, like, for instance, buying that more expensive toilet, right? Or the one with the flapper.
Yep.
Right? Like that, you know, even though it's $50 more, $60 more, that seems like a no-brainer that people should do.
Yeah, no flapper toilet.
No flapper toilet. Yeah. Sorry, doesn't have a flapper.
Doesn't have a flapper.
Right. What else do you think? Because to guys, to give you a little background, Andy, also you were at Home Depot for
11 years.
Okay. What were you doing there?
I was there. It started as district over their pro desks in 2007. I had 7 and then 9 in 2010, and then I got a second district in 2018, but I was also handling large key accounts, large key commercial accounts for them across the country. They were either housed here, based here, or based elsewhere with properties here, but I was sort of like a multifamily specialist thanks to being educated by people here in Rochester, but also a family office out of New Jersey and a couple of other operators that were doing stuff here. I was lucky enough to have C-level access and just figure out what they needed because there was a lot of windshield time driving from Rochester to Columbus, getting on planes and going to Roanoke, Virginia, South Carolina, whatever. So we talked a lot about what their priorities were, how they were structuring their debt stacks, what their turn times were, what their priorities were, how they were going to operate this. And it was everything from, you know, here in Rochester, 100 doors, 200 door properties to the one in Michigan that was 2,400 doors on 256 acres right outside of Detroit.
Wow. That's crazy. So,
and that was a 313 buildings, just a ridiculous amount. They were doing like 7 to 10 turns a week.
Minga.
Full guts.
Yeah.
Demo all the way down to the studs in some cases.
Was that a REIT?
It was family office.
Family office.
Yeah.
And they plan on holding
well-capitalized family office.
And they hold family offices usually hold stuff for a long time.
They still have it. They bought that in 15 or 16, and they still have it now.
They have different time horizons. They like to hold things long time.
It's a lot of it is preservation of capital and not necessarily just taking that and getting out.
So yeah.
They do get out. Like, they've sold a ton of stuff they had in New York. They used to have probably 18 or 20 different properties between Albany and Buffalo, and now they have like 5.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, but they've expanded south. So they're in the Carolinas, they're in Virginia, they're in Michigan, they're in Pennsylvania. So a little bit more friendly.
Favorable,
states.
Favorable to the land.
Yeah, the writing's a little on the wall for that kind of stuff. So,
all right, so back to my question. 3 to 5 things that you think, like, back to your Home Depot days, like, hey, don't cheap out on this. And so what would be those things that you can think of?
So don't cheap out on the toilet. Don't cheap out on flooring.
Don't cheap out on flooring.
Don't cheap out on flooring. It's always the last. It's always the first thing to get cut because it's like the last thing people worry about.
Yep.
But having to go in and replace carpets, replace hard surface flooring every single time you turn a unit, if it's 2 or 3 years in, it is a nightmare because labor costs have not gone down. They've skyrocketed even for flooring install. So you're looking at like just a net loss of revenue, because it used to be like back in the day before free money happened, people used to have to worry about doing a renovation, doing a rehab, an upgrade, and getting whatever rent bump they were going to get. But that rent bump had to pay for the renovation in full in a certain number of years, whatever their time horizon was. And it used to be like 5 to 7. If you can do a complete reno on a property and you can get all the money you put into it back out of it in 5 to 7 years and then cash flow for 3 to 5 before the next reno has to be done, that was the target. And that's not the way it is anymore. It might be again because you can't not have reserves now because you can't get loans at 3% to fix your stuff.
Right.
So that calculation is sort of coming back. But when you're going in and you're just using like laminate flooring, right? It's like cardboard. One spill, it doesn't get cleaned up in like whatever they say on the box, 7 minutes, and the floor is ruined. Well, who do you know that has pets, has kids, lives in a house that's going to, you know, track mud or water in and then clean it up 7 minutes later?
Right.
Nobody.
Doesn't happen often.
Doesn't happen. No. Ever.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's like, put an LVP in there. It doesn't have to be the best stuff in the world. Please avoid gray. Like, I'm done with gray. But that's just me. Like, we're done with the gray floor thing. Yeah. Let's go back to wood tones. But
yeah.
Anything is better than sheet vinyl or laminate. Like, okay, if you have hardwood floors, refinish it. Put a coat of poly on it. It's cheaper than doing the labor to rip everything up, throw it away, and do it all again. And
yeah.
Carpet, they're going to depreciate your carpet after, 3 years, I think, is the number?
Yeah.
Something like that. So, like, is it worth doing a better carpet? Depends on the property, like, I would say. If you can go to a nicer carpet that you can shampoo out, if it's a one-year tenant, you can just clean it because it's a 25-ounce blend instead of a crappy 18-ounce polyester, then do that because you're going to save money in the long run over time. Until you have to replace that carpet. But again, it depends on the tenants and where you're at. If they're going to burn the crap out of the carpet, and spill stuff on it and not clean it up, then that's a different type of conversation.
Right.
And it just varies by property. So a lot of stuff that people lose money on is the maintainable stuff.
Yeah.
Like the stuff where it's going to take a maintenance call to go handle that issue or an in-apartment inspection. We know how hard it's been for the last couple of years since COVID, really, to get into units in New York State.
Yep.
Tenants just don't want to let you in.
Yep.
And you don't have a right to get inside. It's your right. building, but that doesn't mean you're allowed in.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So all the things that are your responsibility per your insurance company or per your operating standards that you would have to get in that unit to check on, now you can't do that. Additionally, why would you want to spend the money when there's other products out there? So like I talk about this one all the time. It's the 10-year smoke detector versus the battery operated 9-volt. You can't even buy the battery operated AA 9-volts in New York anymore. People still special order them on Amazon, eBay, whatever.
I think you can see them at Snyderman's once in a while.
Well, let's not go there. They're not supposed to. Anyway, but they are there. You're right. The downside to those is, well, number one, the batteries are like, by the time you figure you're buying them and storing them or doing whatever, you're $1, $2. But what's the labor cost you to go in there and do that? Like, you're literally talking about once or twice a year going in and replacing batteries for these tenants if you're going to stay aligned with your insurance policy.
No doubt.
Right?
Yep.
But it's not the batteries. It's not the $5 smoke detector. It's the freaking $20, $30 that you're going to spend on the guy to go in there, especially if you're scattered site and you got to drive between units.
Right.
How much money are you spending in drive time and just runaround time? Stupid. Yes, you get in the unit, you get to do an inspection. But by the same token, are you really saving money adding that time to get on a ladder or pull the thing off the wall, change the batteries, put it in, hit the button, test it, blah,
right.
blah, blah. And the whole reason they got rid of the 10-year, or they got rid of the battery-operated replaceables for the 10-year is because they don't work after 10 years anyway.
Mm.
You have a fire, you've got every point after 10 years, if there's a fire, you have a better chance of that thing not going off.
Mm.
So you can test the battery, you can test the speaker, but it won't work when you need
when
it.
When you
to.
Need it. Damn, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's bad. Yeah, that's why they made it illegal to have the other ones, because people were when I did that property in Webster, 25-year-old smoke detectors labeled in like 1991, still on the wall. They're orange, right? It used to be white, they're orange. But they were still on the wall. You push the button, still beeps.
Hmm.
But when I actually smoke showed them.
That goes in there.
I actually showed them. I lit a paper towel on fire and waved it around underneath, and it didn't go off. I'm like,
oh, God.
Hey? Oh, yeah. They don't work anymore.
I wonder if insurance would go down. I'm thinking about, like, my friends in Florida who are multifamily owners, and they're just saying nothing's penciling, and we're in really trouble because our insurance has gone up so much. Yeah. And so, but I wonder if, you know, not that it's going to be helpful so much because of just
cap rate compression.
Yeah, exactly. And then, oh, by the way, you know, TCO can't help you with a hurricane.
Correct.
but I wonder if, you know, this is something where if insurance looked at and said, hey, you know, you guys are doing the right things by getting the better toilets and the better, you know, this, that, and the other, the better floors and all these different things. Like, does that come into play?
It does. So Jeremy Goodrich, I actually had on my show about 6 months ago, and we talked about it a little bit, and he does nothing under 200 units. He won't talk to anybody who does smaller than that. So he's mostly a multifamily guy, but he insures in every state in the country. And we actually talked about like some creative underwriting based off of doing things that reduce risk on the property, whether it's having programs and standards for like line striping and concrete maintenance and repair and trip and fall fill-ins and all of that kind of stuff, to stuff like the smoke detectors and having toilets with no flappers and no water in appliances and having fire stop cans over the top of your stoves, which is basically if a fire starts on the stovetop, it actually just explodes and puts the fire out.
Wow.
It ruins the food. But I mean, if it's on fire, it's burned anyway. So
right.
you lose. What do you care if the food's ruined?
Right.
We talked a little bit about that, and we talked a little bit about structuring captives, which is a kind of a more advanced insurance where you open a company that's your own, you self-insure for a certain amount, $1 million, $2 million, whatever it is. It lowers your insurance premiums, and you're responsible to hold the capital in an account in case you need to draw it for an accident. If an accident doesn't happen where you need to draw the captive out, then you keep that money.
Interesting.
And that's profit in your pocket.
Interesting.
So, yeah, so self-insuring is something that a lot of these actually family offices have been doing. I worked with that same family office to structure that for the huge complex in Michigan, because it was so massive, and to underwrite it the way they needed to, they had to do a captive to get the numbers to work.
I was gonna say, I don't even, what is that? What is insurance on a, you know, 2400? You know what I mean? Like, it's got to be bananas.
It is massive,
right?
Massive. I mean, they had tennis courts and a golf course, and
wow,
and a couple of Olympic swimming pools. Wow. And just the exposure was huge. They had a physical plant, and just, yeah, it was nuts.
It's
big,
crazy.
Big property.
Yeah.
Big property.
Yeah.
So
what is the, what is, how do people, you know, get your services? Like, what does it look like? How do you just, you come and give like an idea, like, hey, this is what it looks like. Here's what I can do. Like, basically, it doesn't make sense if you can't save them money, right? Right.
Exactly.
So what does that look like?
So typically there's a done for you model where they bring me in to actually help them put the things in place. And then there's a DIY model where I just say, here's all the stuff I see. This is what you should be doing to save money. And we'll make the list, right? So, and then there's the, well, I'll just take a look at it. I'll come in like during due diligence and make that list and say, here's the things that you should be using. And these are the products I think you should be subbing out from what you plan to use and just move ahead with that. So there's kind of like three levels. So usually it starts with like the due diligence walk. When they're walking the units, I walk with the team, look at the things I look at from a structural standpoint, from a building material standpoint, and go, okay, here's all the things we can make improvements on. And, oh, that probably means there's a problem, you know, in the attic. That probably means there's a problem, you know, with venting or whatever it
right.
may be. So I do a little bit more, but it's like, here's my recommendations for what you're going to do. So everybody has seen, like, the add-on of laundry in unit.
Yeah.
And sometimes they provide the laundry when they're doing, like, a condensing dryer without a vent, right? It vents into the apartment. And other times they have the vents already there, and or they vent to the outside through whatever process they do, knocking walls down and putting in chases and
yeah.
all that kind of stuff. And both have their benefits. But when you're venting internally with those condensing dryers, whether it's an all-in-one or a two-piece, they put them in closets typically, so they're out of sight, out of mind. The problem is that that's where the mold grows.
Mm.
So they have black mold growing inside these closets after a year or two.
Mm.
So then you've gone from this amenity that you're charging an extra $100 and maybe $75 to $100, maybe $150 a month for, that then you have a $5,000 or $10,000 black mold remediation
right.
in a couple of years.
Right.
So are they making money doing that? It was not something we knew about when we first started doing that project, right? So like in 2016, we really started seeing that kind of tick up when I was doing the sales part. And now I'm that same property. I'm looking at some of the stuff and going, wow, that's really kind of sucks because they got to gut the drywall and do the mold remediation. They got a lawsuit pending, like all these crazy things
right.
because of it. So there's like that, okay, well, two or three steps down the road, how do you fix this? So there's stuff you can do, but you can't always fix everything.
Right.
So it's like you got to pick what's going to work the best for you in your business, whether it's creative underwriting to get the insurance down, whether it's just removing the moving pieces of maintenance, of having to be in a unit every 6 months to a year to check things and replace batteries and do that stuff. Making tenants responsible for light bulbs, right? Every multifamily operator I know of has always had something in the lease where we provide you the light bulbs when you move in. If they burn out, you're on the hook to replace them.
Right.
Okay, well, how do you do that when you've got an integrated LED light fixture that doesn't take a light bulb?
Right. Right. How do you do it?
You don't. Right? You're gonna let your tenant replace
no.
a light fixture?
No.
You think that's gonna go
no.
well? I mean, come on, people. Really think
right.
about it. So some of it comes down to, okay, well, now I've removed this piece that the tenant was paying for and now I'm paying for it. Can I even get that light fixture in 3 years, right? We buy all these light fixtures from Home Depot or Lowe's. You think you can find anything other than boob lights that are the same 3 years from now that are there today? No.
Right, right.
So what do? You have to find a higher-end fixture that takes light bulbs and put them into the units, and instead of paying $15 for a light fixture, now you're paying $75 or $80,
right.
which is what you pay for an integrated LED anyway, but it lets you stay off the hook with the tenant for those bulb changes.
The way you think about this stuff is really just, you can only get it when you've spent 15, 20 years in
for
the
better
trenches.
Or worse. For better or worse,
you know,
yeah.
in the trenches to really see all these different things. Because again, it's like, okay, let me put the income and expenses together and put my NOI.
Capital
and
stack
like,
is
yeah.
a different animal than
yeah.
the nitty gritty on the operation. And that's why I don't talk to CEOs about the operation side. Like, they don't care about the light fixture.
Yeah.
Like, the light bulb goes off when you say, well, here's why we want to do this. But then they go, oh, I didn't really think about that. Well, of course not, because that's not your problem. That's your maintenance guy's problem.
Right.
And your maintenance guy is not calling you and saying, hey, what do I do with these light fixtures that don't match? The property manager is not letting you take that call. The property manager is saying, I don't care. Just put something in. I don't care if it matches.
Right.
And then when you go to walk that unit again to do your next set of rehabs, you're like, why are all these light fixtures different?
Right. And it makes a big difference. It's a big deal.
Well, and it's a curb appeal thing too, right?
That's what
because
I mean.
Everything looks different.
Right.
So what are you going to do? You're going to replace every light fixture in every time you turn now?
Right.
That's not a good idea.
Right.
Right? Because you're going from a coat of paint and some cleanup and maybe replace a carpet to, well, now I got to change every light fixture in here because none of them match.
Right.
So that's not a winner either. So, I mean, but again, it comes from working through these things in the field. And like, I have weird experience that nobody else has. So it's sort of like this weird niche that I've been able to build for myself that pays the bills. So,
right.
Like, you know, I can't.
Well, it's very valuable. It's very valuable for people who, you know, like if you're just somebody who's very good with the numbers and good at raising the money, but operation wise, you're like, well, look, I got a property manager that's going to handle this. But, you know, the property manager's like, well, I have my Buildium set up or I have AppFolio set up. And, you know, I'm a property manager. I can take a call and I got a maintenance group. But it's a little bit more on your end where it's just, hey, think about these couple of things and the money is going to be there for you when you do it.
And it comes down to the asset management versus property management
thing,
which is where having a relationship with a family office or with a vertically integrated, you know, owner operator where they're doing their own in-house maintenance, maybe they have their own in-house project management, whatever, it's an easier conversation to have.
Yeah.
Because they can have control. When you're a third-party property management organization, you're not going to have somebody coming in to you who's an owner and saying, I want to change everything you do. I know you have 20 customers, but you're going to change everything you do for me and go outside your normal processes because I want you to.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen because that's too much overhead for them. Anytime you change anything like that, there's cost because you have to teach and learn and ingrain and train and uptick, and then there's opportunity costs. There's all these other things that go
into
it. Well, exactly, right? Is this going to work? Is this not going to work? If you don't have the level of control you need, all you're going to get is a fight, right?
Yep.
It's like when you're trying to change a guy who loves Sherwin-Williams to using Glidden.
Sure.
That's a fight you're going to have. And is it worth the amount of time it's going to take you to convince that guy that this paint is better than this paint?
Right.
Or are you just going to let him use whatever the hell he wants because it shuts him up and gets the job
done? We love Sherwin-Williams.
Well, I think everybody does, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
we turn everybody over to, like, carpets, flooring, blinds. Like, Rob and AJ are, like, phone
calls. Yeah, Rob's
Now Rob's
deal.
Not anymore.
Oh.
Rob's not the man anymore. Now there's a woman that took his
spot. Oh, no kidding.
He's doing all commercial
stuff. He's doing commercial stuff. Yeah. Rob's a good dude. Rob, I got to give a shout out to Rob. He would just cold called us, and then he just kept calling. I'm like, dude, we're not that big. And we were flipping like two or three houses a year. I'm like, it's not that crazy, man. And then he kept doing it. And not only must have been worth it to him, but he saved us so much money. Rob's the man. So Rob's a good. And they make a great beer, Stumbling Monkey.
Yeah, yeah. AJ's good too. So
shout out to AJ. So the last couple minutes here, I want to talk about marketing because you've done a very good job the last year. I think you've done a fantastic job. I mean, let's talk about two things I think are interesting that I think not a lot of people are taking advantage of, and I think they should. Number one is Twitter.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on Twitter and how has it worked for you?
So Twitter is an interesting space because it's got all of these, like, obviously there's all the gurus that are out there trying to sell courses to people, which is fine. That's not the crowd I hang with. I try to get in with the operators and the people who are doing business and not like selling things. They're just sharing information and talking to get the information out there and have conversations with other operators.
By the way,
in a public space.
This is brought to you by Marty Grizzani, the Marty Grizzani Show, and the Marty Grizzani course, which is coming out. No, I'm just kidding.
Nice. nice.
Go ahead.
So they're not looking to it's not like Instagram where they're posting pictures of their cars. Standing in front of this. They're talking about the actual stuff they run into that they see that are issues. And then there's other operators that are in there just chiming in. And it's very niche stuff. Like most of where I'm at is on the commercial side. And I don't have a lot of followers. I only started really doing Twitter maybe 6 months ago, and I still don't do it seriously. I don't post any of my own stuff. I just comment on other people's stuff because I'm not to the point where I have enough people to even bother. So it's interesting. I've got a lot of good relationships on there because of just starting one-off conversations with people being like, hey, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? Not just posting comments publicly, but most people have their, at least in the retweet space or I guess they're calling it CREX now, for commercial real estate on X. Most of them have their DMs open.
Yeah.
So you just send them a note. It's just like an email.
Yeah.
90% of them are running their own accounts. They're not being run by VAs. They're not being run by social media managers. And they respond, and it's actually them.
Yeah.
And they'll tell you outright. Like, I've been trying to get Shlomo Chop to come on my show just to talk about restructuring and CMBS stuff for 6 months.
That.
And he's like, yeah, someday maybe, but you're not there yet. I'm like, okay, that's cool. I get it. he's honest, though.
Yeah, like, yeah. That would drive me bananas, but I get it. Like, he's probably busy and... But I would just rather him say no, yeah, than you're not big enough yet.
Yeah. But I mean, that's the reality.
I get it. I get it.
He's a big deal.
Yeah.
I respect that. Like, you got to put value on your time.
I get it.
So, you know, there's got to be an exchange of audiences and,
right,
and draw. And my audience isn't big enough to draw the type of people that would want to do work with him.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, CMBS workouts are very complicated.
Yeah.
And he's like the king,
yeah,
of it. So yeah, why wouldn't I expect that from him? Like, if he's the real deal, that's sort of what I would hope the answer would be.
Well, does he know that you were on the Whitney Sewell show twice in a row?
I don't think he cares. And it was three times.
Does he know that you're on the Marty Gruzzani show right now?
He might.
Okay. So how is the podcast? Do you like doing it?
I enjoy it. Yeah. Mostly it's me venting about dumb stuff.
Yeah.
So when I do solo shows.
I do like when you start venting on dumb shit.
When I bring people on, it's more about them and what they bring to the table, and I try to keep them on topic as far as how what they do and how they do things can be used by other people to save money, make money, keep away from the stupid tax. So I've been pretty particular about who I bring on and what the episode topics are and all that.
Yep.
And that's why I haven't had a lot of guests, right? I got like 32 episodes with just me running my mouth, and then like 5 guest episodes that are published. I've got like 4 more recorded that are just sitting in the queue waiting to finish video editing and audio and all,
yeah,
that stuff.
Are you doing that yourself?
No.
Okay. Yeah.
No.
Yeah. No, it's hard.
It's a time sink.
Yeah, it's hard.
I don't know if I'd say it's hard. It's a time sink. Yeah. Solo episodes don't need any.
So right.
I can record a solo episode and get it out within 20 minutes,
yeah,
if I wanted to, but I usually wait and cut out my run-on sentences from being ADHD. So
yeah.
I cut out a lot of the dumb things I say and things that I listen to afterwards and go, oh, I probably shouldn't say that. They'll probably sue me. And
yes,
then I remove it. And a lot of my clients, they're not even on social media. So it's like, I'm not going to come out and say, hey, when I was working with XYZ, this is what we saw in the prep. Like, that's not going to make me any friends or get me any business. So I keep everybody that I work with like super down low. The other stuff I do that I've done, I don't really worry about advertising too much. Like all the consulting work for like, you know, law firms and doing stuff for Handy, Angie's List, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Like I advertise that, right? But I'm not going to talk about what I do for a property manager to help them, you know, not be stupid.
Yeah. I just think it's a very niche thing, and I think it's still a baby of yours, you know?
No, I love it. I think it. You know, I'm just trying to basically, it started off as, well, I've got all this stuff written in the book. Why don't I just start sharing stuff in the book? Because I need to do something with it because I can't publish it. So why don't I just pick parts of it apart and just share it with people? Because what's it going to hurt?
Right.
Like, how is it going to hurt me to give this information out? Nothing I do is a trade secret. Like, I didn't put secret sauce on this. I just had access to a whole bunch of different operators, all with the same problems, all fixing things differently. So why would I not take what I see and just stick it somewhere where people can use it,
yeah,
right? Like company A has 10,000 doors. Company B has 8,000 doors. They all have tenants. They're all dealing with C and B and A properties. Well, the properties, you know, if it's built from 1960 to today, all the buildings are built not necessarily to the same quality or standards, but they all face the same things. They all have floors that wear out. They all have appliances they need to maintain. They all have light fixtures. They all have plumbing. They all have HVAC. Like, there's building science and components that goes into all this stuff. So why would I not take these fixes that help them save money and share it? Like,
right,
what does it hurt me? Like,
right,
I'm not going to say, oh, did you know that this guy, operator XYZ, who's your competitor, does this? Like, I'm not doing that. But I'm saying, hey, some of the guys I work with are doing this. Why don't you do that? And then it's not like a betrayal of trust thing. It's just this is information you should know, and you should take advantage of it because they're making money fixing their problems this way. Why aren't you?
Right.
And usually it comes down to, I had no idea that's how that worked.
Well, and that's what brings me to my last question, because they don't know and they have no idea how it works. So how do they get in touch with you if they wanted to work with someone and figure out their TCO.
So they can find me, obviously, at TCOmethod.com, AndyMcQuaid.com. Not spelled like the high school if you're in Rochester, for God's sake. Rochester spells it wrong.
Trust me. That saint is the one that had their name wrong.
Correct.
Yeah. That priest had their name wrong from the 1800s.
From the very beginning.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's incorrect.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, it's a Northern Ireland, Southern Ireland thing. So it's the Republic of. And
yeah. But yeah. Anyway. You're Southern Ireland. Yeah. We don't want to talk about, Northern Ireland. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So anyway, so Andy McQuaid, they can suit any company that I have, right? So I've got like the arm companies, I've got ARM procurement or ARM purchasing, I've got TCO Method, Andy McQuaid, just send Andy @, it'll get to me eventually. Three of them go through a VA, one of them comes directly to me. So Andy at AndyMcQuaid.com comes to me. Everything else goes through a VA. They can find me on LinkedIn, connect with me there. Don't just follow me, actually hit the little three dots and do the connect thing. Don't just follow. Follow is stupid. Don't just follow. So, like, if you're going to connect with me to do business, don't just hit the follow button, because I don't post there a lot. So, like, occasionally I did, and I need to get better at it, so I'll probably start posting again. But for now, you want to get a hold of me. LinkedIn, send me an email. Those are the two best ways.
Andy McQuaid knows his shit, and I'm glad.
Debatable.
That, and I'm glad that I know him, and I'm glad that he's a friend. Andy, thanks for coming on the show, brother.
No, thank you so much for having me.
This
We've been trying to do this for a long time. I know. Sorry. I'm sorry we didn't do it sooner.
Hey, it is what it is. I'm just glad you're here, and this was really good.
I appreciate it, man.
Yeah, man.
Thank you.
Appreciate you.
Yeah, appreciate it.
All right, y'all. Easy. Take care. Brush your hair.
Thank you for tuning into the Marty Gruzzani Show. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, leave us an honest rating and review. If you're on Spotify, make sure you follow us for weekly episodes.